right, we're back. Michael Herzog, I'm American Awakening. Sure. Second hour coming up here with my guest, John Hankey. And, John, just before the break, we were talking about this this gentleman that was at, I believe it was University of Florida, where John Kerry was speaking, and he got tasered. Have you seen that clip, John?
Yeah, and I think it really is worth looking at carefully. This guy, I mean, the first time I saw it, all I saw was some guy stands up and says, rah, 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 skull and bones, and he's very loud and apparently belligerent, and the cops standing behind him start to grab him, and then he starts to fight him, and they wrestle him to the ground. And I felt sort of ambivalent about it the first time I saw it. And then I found a longer clip, and this guy starts off, and he's talking about, well, and a couple of things to notice. In addition, once you get this background, it's a very, very different story. This was not an auditorium with 5,000 people who had shown up to hear John Kerry give a speech. This was a journalism class that Kerry had come to. It was called a forum. Now, a forum means that you don't just have one speaker, but that you have a back and forth. And it's not like this. When I first heard about it, I thought the guy was heckling him. And it's nothing of the sort. There's maybe a couple of hundred people in this auditorium, and I suspect that it's less than 100. A journalism class, or several, two or three journalism classes are at this thing. This guy, the first time I saw it, I thought, well, Jesus, is he an off-campus agitator, an outside agitator? No, he was not only a campus student, he was a member of the journalism class, and he's engaging in this forum. And the question that he wants to ask Kerry is, and I'll say it briefly, and he says it at greater length, was, you won the election. There's all of this evidence that you won the election. 60,000 votes were stolen in Ohio, and another 60,000 were stolen in Florida, and perhaps a million votes across the country, and still you won by this huge popular margin. And yet you conceded within 24 hours in spite of the fact that all of this evidence was there. Did it have anything to do with the fact that you were in Skull and Bones? And the guy doesn't ask the question quite that bluntly, and maybe if I had been there to coach him, I'd have gotten him to say it a little more straightforward. But he talks about the fact that the election was stolen, and he holds up Greg Palast's book on the topic, and Kerry says that he's read it. But, I mean, my point is this one, that this guy is completely, the student is completely legitimate. He's completely legitimately at where he's supposed to be. He's doing what he certainly was the assignment, which was to do some research and ask some intelligent questions. And this guy has done the most research and is asking the best question. And as a result of him doing what he's supposed to do, these two cops jump him. And my question is, and I made a point in an email to somebody I sent this morning. I said, Kerry's not a flower girl. And, you know, he's not an insurance salesman. He's a U.S. senator, and he's also supposedly a war hero, which I'm very much beginning to doubt. And not only did he sit by like a trained German shepherd when the election was stolen from him, as if he had been trained to do it, but now he's sitting by and saying nothing as the cops manhandle this guy who is only exercising the most important of the American rights. And I think that as a U.S. senator, he should have started shouting the first second that these cops moved towards the student and said, hey, what are you doing back there? Get your hands off that guy, and let me answer his question. And instead, he stood back there while they wrestled the guy to the ground. And you know, this, for people who haven't seen it, it takes them well over 60 seconds and maybe closer to 2 minutes before they get the guy in the back of the auditorium, get him on the ground, get him handcuffed, and then start to taser him.
Well, I agree with you in that respect, and yes, he should have, and I questioned why he didn't. But my concern is not just this incident. My concern is that we're being conditioned here, because even the reporting, you know, when they come out with, well, a fight broke out. No, there was no fight that broke out. The police grabbed the guy and dragged him off. All right, we've got to take a break. Let's continue on this a little bit when we get back. I've got a point to make too, John. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening. We'll be back in three. Stick with us. We got more.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear, and here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
All right, we're back. Michael Herzog, The Earth Awakening, with my guest, John Hanke. And, John, before we get back on to the Holocaust situation, I want to make a point here. What's interesting about that, number one, on John Kerry, John Kerry claims he did not know that the student was being tasered. Number two, the way the media was reporting this is they're reporting it that a fight broke out. There's no fight that broke out. These two cops dragged this guy across the room, and he was resisting only because he was dumbfounded that they would even go to this length over basically just asking a question. At least this is my take on it. And then they wrestled him to the ground and tasered him. And the problem that I've got here, the concern that I have, is it seems that our police department, not only have they been funded and they've tripled the amount of police in this country, but they're getting taser happy. I mean, I have personal acquaintances that I know that have been tasered for just... You know, the most ridiculous of reasons, and I'm talking about multiple times. This incident that happened, I'm not sure, I think it happened yesterday, in a city council meeting where there was a gentleman that was in a discussion. He was in a disagreement with the mayor, and the mayor kicked him out of the meeting. And the gentleman very politely, very professionally packed his paperwork up, put it in his briefcase, and walked to the door. And between the door and the outer door, there's a foyer of about 10 feet. When he got to the first door, there was a police officer that was walking him out, grabbed him by the tail of the shirt, told him to stand there for a minute, said something to the mayor, then turned around and shoved this guy as hard as he could through that 10-foot foyer where his face slammed into the door, put him out the door, and proceeded for a good minute to a minute and a half just lighting into this guy with fisticuffs in his face on the ground. And this was totally uncalled for, and I'm seeing this happen more and more. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there, but you know, and get off topic. But the point I'm trying to make here is that I'm seeing this happen with regularity, and this is cause for concern.
Maybe so. I mean, the thing that struck me about the other point that hasn't been discussed in the incident in Florida with the student, right? This kid was where he was supposed to be, doing what he was supposed to be doing, but he resisted arrest. And the thing is that you and I sit back and watch as the election gets stolen, and we don't resist, we just watch it happen. And here's a guy who said, no, these are my rights. I have a right to be here. I have a right to do this. And I'm not going to let you just drag me off quietly from a place that I have a right to be, saying things that I have a right to say. And so, I mean, really, I think that this guy, if you only see the end of the clip, it seems like this is a guy who's willing to disturb the peace. And clearly he is willing to disturb the peace. But I think that, you know, he's really heroically taking a stand to say, no, you know, I'm not going to take this. I have a right to these things, and I'm not going to let you, I'm not going to go quietly while you deprive me of, you know, my life and liberties.
Well, you know, and it takes me back. I remember, what's that old saying, when they came for the Jews, I wasn't Jewish, so I didn't say anything. When they came for the dissenters, I didn't say anything because I wasn't a dissenter. And by the time they came for him, there was nobody else to say anything to.
Right.
And I'm starting to see this happen with regularity. I'll give you a prime instance where I don't know how familiar you are with the situation up there in New Hampshire, but there was supposed to be a concert that was held over the 15th, this past weekend. And these people are the people that are in this income tax standoff, where they've basically stood up and said, show me the law. They were going to have a concert over the weekend, and when the people were started showing up for the concert, there was a number of marshals that had blocked the road, along with sheriffs and the Plainfield Police Department, that were not allowing anybody to go through. So everybody was turned away. The concert didn't go off. There was four people that had been affiliated with these, Ed and Elaine up there in New Hampshire, that were arrested. And one of the arrests, or there was another arrest that was made with a member of the media. And this gentleman I have met personally. And this gentleman was interrogated by the federal marshals for several hours, and he was threatened. He was threatened with torture, and he was threatened by, and this is out of his own lips, was threatened with rape. So, you know, this looks like it could be getting out of hand here. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm ready to get back. You had a... We left off, there was an email that asked about Hitler's homosexual Jewish lover.
Oh, yes, okay.
And the way that this plugs in is, we were talking about Hitler being a puppet, and if you have anybody who's a puppet, you have to have some way of controlling them, right? They had to have something to hold over Hitler's head. And I don't think we've talked about this, and I can't off the top of my head suggest why. Anyhow, there's a very scholarly book. It's called Hidden Hitler. And it goes through all of the evidence to suggest that Hitler was gay. And it's very, very, very substantial, not the least of which is the words from the lips of Hitler's girlfriend, Eva Braun, who is quoted from a reliable source as saying that she never got anything from Hitler as a man. She also attempted suicide three or four times, and his previous girlfriend did commit suicide. You know, none of those things are that I've just mentioned are conclusive, but there's all of these statements from various individuals who knew him when he was a starving artist on the streets of Vienna. Some of them from good friends and statements that are clearly not meant to be incriminating, but are. And I'm not going to go into it. It's, you know, it's 300 pages, and I recommend it. It's called Hidden Hitler. It's probably at your local library. But the point is this one, that in addition to which, that Hitler's parentage is clearly in doubt. That is to say that his birth certificate, or his father's birth certificate, is clearly a forgery. Right? I don't think that there's any real argument among mainstream scholars that Hitler's father's birth certificate is a forgery, and there's some considerable evidence that Hitler's father's father, his grandfather, was Jewish. That is to say that his grandmother was working as a servant in the home of some wealthy Jews, and that she was fired, but then she received for years thereafter monthly compensation, which is taken to be child support, and that she was fired for being conceiving a child in their employ. Now, some people have said that this was a Rothschild residence, and I don't believe that very serious scholarship will back that up. But in any case, it seems that certainly what's true is that Himmler had a huge file on Hitler, that it's very likely that he had several statements from people who knew him in Vienna when he was working as a prostitute. I mean, that's the words out of Hitler's closest friend at the time suggest that Hitler knew much more about male prostitution than he should have, if he were as innocent as his friend was. Anyway, so that when you ask the question, how was it that, oh, and here's another one, how was it that they were able to keep the strings on Hitler, right? Why couldn't Hitler just break free and say, well, look, I'm der Führer, and if I stand up and say this, people are going to do it, regardless of who's trying to pull strings behind my back. Captain Mayer says, right in the article in the New York Times, Captain Mayer, Hitler's supervisor when he was in Army intelligence, says that Hitler was thrown out of the Army because of his secret relationship with an open homosexual. The open homosexual with whom Hitler had a secret relationship that got him thrown out of the Army was Ernst Röhm. Ernst Röhm was, after Hitler came to power, he made Ernst Röhm an open homosexual, the head of the Brown Shirts. And then an incident that not very many people are aware of, but is, you know, it's in, you get any book on Hitler's rise, and there's a chapter on it called The Night of the Long Knives, which is in, 1933. It's very shortly after Hitler's rise to power and his assumption of the control of the German government, that they rounded up Röhm and they rounded up all the other homosexual leaders of the Brown Shirts, and they killed them. And they explicitly killed them for being homosexual. And, well, what does that say to Hitler under these circumstances, right, where Himmler has a file that is filled with statements that have been, you know, at his pleasure, have been gotten at the result of torture, right? If they want somebody to say something, Himmler certainly had the ability to torture people to get them to say whatever it was that they wanted. In any case, we have the open record that Hitler was thrown out of the army for his association with a homosexual. So, I mean, that on its face, without going much further, is pretty powerful evidence that Hitler had a very, very shady background in terms of his sexuality. And I think that that was certainly one of the major threats that they were able to show, right, hold over his head in order to get him to do what he was told when he was told to do it. Although, as I said, apparently they never held it over his head to get him to sign a paper authorizing the Holocaust.
So I am assuming during the Night of the Long Knives, they must have murdered his lover, Mr. Röhm, as well.
Oh, absolutely. You bet.
And that would be enough to scare the pants off, I think.
You would think so.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Well, I mean, that would make sense then. I mean, that would, you know, here he is in a compromised position to where, you know, he appoints this guy to the head of the Brown Shirts, and then they take out the Brown Shirts, you know, obviously, you know, he would be in tremendous fear of ever having that secret come out.
But I'd like to get us back to this discussion of Göring. Göring is the guy that Mayer says was the power behind the throne, the power behind Hitler. And Göring is certainly the most dynamic individual. I'm right, our other alternative was Himmler, and Himmler is just a clerk, right? I mean, he is the embodiment of clerkdom. He's very, very nerdy. He's, by everyone's description, not the least bit charismatic or dynamic in any way, shape, or form, but he is a great clerk. Göring, on the other hand, is this, you know, very dynamic and powerful and able and competent individual who we started off by saying got thrown out of high school for defending Jews. And here we have him signing documents that are authorizing the Holocaust. Now, my question was, how did this guy who attacked the leaders of Kristallnacht for their damage to the German economy How did he overlook $1 trillion sitting in the banks of the victims of the Holocaust? Right? He's extremely competent. He's extremely intelligent. He's extremely energetic. And he dropped $1 trillion. And well, that's where I'd like to pick up when we come back.
All right. Take a break. Be back in three. Stick with us. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt? Maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
American Awakening with my guest John Hanke, talking about the Holocaust and the fact that, well, Hitler was a puppet regarding this issue. Short segment coming up to the bottom of the hour. I want to give out John's website again. It's www.bushkilledjfk.com. Go in there and buy some videos. Pass them out to your friends. He's got some 9/11 videos on there, and he's got some with other people as well. Loose change, folks. If you haven't seen it, grab a copy of it, okay? He's got some, what I understand, pretty good deals on them. So go in there and shop around. All right, John, let's go. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, and I wanted to offer to give away a prize to the person who can answer this question, which is how could Himmler have been persuaded to dedicate all of these resources to the Holocaust? How could he have been so incredibly insightful and careful in his analysis of how Kristallnacht was going to be a damage to the German economy? How could he have done all of that and overlooked the $1 trillion that was sitting in the bank accounts of the Jews who were slaughtered by the Nazis during the Holocaust? He was, right, I mean, he was in charge of the German economy. He was a brilliant economist. He was a brilliant organizer. He organized, and this is worth talking about, in 1942, at the beginning of 1942, he had organized the deportation of 537,000 Jews. There were only 600,000 Jews in Germany And he had arranged the deportation of 500,000 and more of them. And the trick about his fairly complex deportation arrangement, somebody mentioned the book Transfer Agreement, he had this arrangement so that when people left, he could get their assets, he could get their bank accounts, and it was arranged by giving them, I think they just seized outright 75% of their assets, but they would give them 25% in script, and then wherever the people went, and most of them, I believe, went to Israel, they could then take the script and use it to buy German-produced goods, which means that the other 25% in exchange for the goods would wind up back in the hands of the Nazi government. He developed all of these very, very carefully orchestrated plans to get his hands on the resources of the 500,000 Jews that they didn't kill. Why didn't he just seize outright the assets of the 6 million Jews that they did kill? How can you possibly explain that he could be so stupid? And I don't think that you can persuade me that he was stupid. What you then have to do is explain the answer to the question, how was he, what pressures could have been brought on him to say, okay, I'll leave that money alone? What could they say to him to persuade him? Because I believe he was a loyal German. I believe he was thought he was serving the best interests of the German people and the German government in joining the Nazi Party. How was he persuaded to sell out those interests by not seizing this $1 trillion in assets? And then I wanted to come back to the planning conference that he authorized under his signature. The primary executioners of the Holocaust came together in January, I believe it's January 20th of 1942, to discuss the formalizing of the Holocaust. Now, if people are paying close attention, that should all of that strike them as very, very strange. First of all, Hitler had been talking about a final solution for the Jews for the previous 20 years, and it isn't until after Pearl Harbor, it isn't until after the U.S. declaration of war, it isn't until after the Germans are facing the invasion of the U.S. that they decide finally, oh, now it's time to implement the final solution. As I've indicated, there's nothing to indicate that Hitler regarded final solution to mean anything but deportation. His signature is on orders of deportation. It is not on any orders associated with the Holocaust, but...
I have an answer.
Well, I may have to give you a prize.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll open up the phone lines here at 800-313-9443 if anybody thinks they have an answer to it and wants to get the free prize before I give my answer. But at any rate, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I want to put that out there.
It's more than all right. The prize is the combination of JFK to the Bush connection and the assassination of John Kennedy Jr. I want to come back to this guy, David Irving, who made this allegation about what a detriment the Holocaust was to the German war effort, and I wanted to put that into context. And I've already mentioned how the formal move to formalize and really organize the Holocaust was made in January of 1942, and how that's after the U.S. declaration of war. I also want to talk about the Russian front and what was going on at the time. People in your audience will have heard of Blitzkrieg, and they may have heard of Fifth Column. And let me start with the Fifth Column, which is that the Germans, the Nazis, had infiltrators in the governments of every country against whom they went to war, including the U.S. and Great Britain. But it's how you can explain, and in case people were puzzled, and they should be, how a vastly outnumbered German army was able to conquer France in a couple of months, how a vastly outnumbered German army was able to conquer Poland in 1 month and just sweep through the rest of Europe. How are they able to do this? And Blitzkrieg is not the entire answer. A more important answer probably is this business of the Fifth Column, that is to say that the Polish generals and the French generals were on the side of the Nazis. When the Nazis got to Paris, virtually the entire French government went over to the Nazis. The French government announced, listen, you don't have to send in occupiers. We will run France for Germany. And, right, the Vichy government, they didn't set it up in Paris. They set it up in Vichy, but it was essentially the same people who had been running France in the first place. So that France was being run by people who were sympathetic to the Nazis and who didn't resist, who did everything they could to sabotage the Nazi war effort. Well, that didn't happen when they invaded Russia, that they didn't have a lot of infiltrators. They didn't have people sabotaging the Russian war effort. And we'll talk about Blitzkrieg when we come back. We'll talk about white.
Well, you're getting pretty good at this. Okay. Next time I'll let you go to break. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my guest John Hanke. Stay tuned. Stay with us. We'll be back in three with more. We'll talk about Blitzkrieg.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear. And here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Attention, this is an RBN financial news bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
American Awakening, coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona, with my guest John Hanke, and we're talking about the Blitzkrieg and the Fifth Column. So go ahead and continue. The lines are open at 800-313-9443 if you want to call in and try to gain that prize, folks. The lines are open. Go ahead, John.
Well, the point is that the point of the Blitzkrieg, of discussing Blitzkrieg and the Fifth Column, was to understand the situation that the Nazis were in when they began planning the Holocaust in earnest. Which is to say, on January 20th of 1942, when the planning meeting took place, the German invasion of Russia had not only stalled, but had begun to work violently backward. And I said that the Fifth Column, the Nazi infiltrators of the enemy governments, having French and Polish generals on the side of the Nazis and sabotaging the war effort, was absolutely crucial. And the thing about Blitzkrieg, people may know, is it means lightning war. And the idea is that the German armies were vastly outnumbered on in the battle with France and in the battle with Poland, and I believe in the battle with Belgium. I don't have that in front of me, but I have a pretty clear recollection that when they took on the Belgian army, they were outnumbered. But the idea was that with Blitzkrieg is that you hit them hard and you hit them fast and you hit them with everything you have and you rout them and you get them on the run, and then and in that manner you're able to have a small force defeat a larger force. And that's particularly effective if you have generals on the other side misdirecting things and not passing on orders and not carrying out orders and not passing on information. Then that sort of an attack can be very, very effective. But that didn't work in Russia. And in Russia, at Stalingrad and at Moscow, those two major battles along the Eastern Front, the armies had ground to a standstill. And this was now trench warfare, right? And it was just face-to-face, fight them out. And there was nothing blitzkrieg about it. And the Germans were at a terrible disadvantage, right? I mean, they were not playing their game anymore, right? They were out of the game that they had used successfully throughout Europe up until that point, and they were playing a game that all the experts looking at it would say, well, this is not going to go well for them because they're outmanned, right? I think the population of Russia is like three times the population of Germany. Anyway, in addition to which, in late December, the Russians had launched a counteroffensive at Stalingrad and had was just, you know, tearing up the German army. It was a major victory for the Russians. And in that context, these guys get together at Wannsee and discuss the organizing of the Holocaust. Now, there were some factories in Germany where defense factories producing military goods where 70% of the workers were Jewish. And at the Wannsee meeting, they said, oh, we're going to kill them all, right? Goering, and the problems that the Nazis were having militarily were due to labor shortages, the manpower shortages, and goods and material shortages. And the Holocaust was a decision to start killing the slave laborers that they had at these Jewish factories manufacturing this stuff. Well, if you watch the movie Schindler's List, they discussed that particular issue, and the decision was made at Wannsee, we don't care about that particular issue, we're going to kill them anyway. Auschwitz was one of the largest military producing areas in Germany, and they decided we're going to start killing the people who are working at these factories, we're going to starve them to death. And I mean, anybody who has any association with any sort of manufacturing process knows that mistreating your workers is not the best way to, especially starving them to death, is not the best way to get the best work out of them. It would have been much, much more efficient. And here we have Goering, the efficiency expert of efficiency experts, deciding to do all this crazy stuff that was so detrimental to the war effort. And the question that I wanted to pose is, how do you persuade them to do it? Right? How do you persuade? So we now have two things going on. How do you persuade Goering to ignore the $1 trillion, and how do you persuade him that the U.S. has declared war? The day that U.S. troops land on European shores, the war is over, right? There's the Germans are losing in their war, in a one-front war against Russia. When there are American soldiers with boots on the ground in Europe, the war is over. There's, any military analyst would be able to declare it over at that point. And in that situation where they're facing that threat, that absolute positive threat, I mean, the Americans are coming. It's going to take them 2.5 years, and that's your big hint. It's going to take them 32 months to get there. Somebody else explain why that is. But when the American boots are on the ground, the war is over. The Germans have lost, and they've lost. So let's start committing war crimes that we are guaranteed to be executed for committing. How does that make any sense? How can you reconcile that with anything? What possible explanation can you have for these guys making the decision that they're going to start committing war crimes for which they positively will be executed, rather than throwing, and this is an argument that Irving, the Holocaust denier, makes, rather than throwing all of their resources into defeating Russia? Most of the Jews in the world lived in Russia at that time. In, I believe, the Wannsee speech, it might be in the Kristallnacht speech, in any case, in one of Goering's speeches, he mentions that there are, no, it's Heydrich's speech at Wannsee. He mentions that there are 5 million Jews living in Russia. So rather than focusing on trying to defeat the Russians so that we can kill all those Jews, we're going to focus on this minority of Jews that we have control over, and we're going to kill them now, sabotage the war effort, and lose, and also subject ourselves to being executed by the victors when they get here, which they surely will. And how does that make any sense? And let's hear your answer, and then I'll tell you mine.
My answer to that?
Yes.
The only word that comes to mind is somehow they were compromised.
Okay, but how?
I don't know. They were all gay?
Well, so let me roll.
It's an enormous question. It's something that I would have to literally ponder for a while and put the pieces together, John. I mean, Jiminy Frost,
Okay.
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let me throw you a couple of hints.
All right.
When I was in the seventh grade, I read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich because I wanted to know how could they have allowed this guy to get rearmed? How could he have come to power? And also in the background of that research I was doing in the seventh grade was the question of how could they have taken 32 months? How can you declare war and then take 32 months before you start the war? How did that happen?
Here's another one for you. It's being controlled on both sides.
Here's another. Thank you. Here's another one for you. Alan Dulles. There's all of this garbage that the U.S. government didn't know about the Holocaust. Pure garbage. In 1939, Brightman, this guy who I don't particularly, I hate his politics, but he has all this information for you. In 1939, the U.S. Consul General announced that the Germans were going to begin the Holocaust. And they knew about the Holocaust in real time, and in December of 42, it might have been November of 42, they made a public statement. The British and the U.S. together made a public statement to the world, and especially to the German High Command. We know that you are carrying out an extermination of the German people. There's all this secrecy associated with the Holocaust, right? And it's all over the place, especially Himmler, who was the main guy involved, telling everybody, oh, this is secret, hush, hush, and all of the people who worked at the death camps had to swear an oath of secrecy, and the Americans and the British have announced to them that we know about it. We know what you guys are doing. So Alan Dulles goes to Germany at that time. And I'm sorry, he goes to Switzerland, and he's in communication with all of the German high command throughout, from the time that he arrives, which is shortly after the declaration of war, until the end of the war. And he's integral in Operation Sunrise, which saved all of the leaders. The Wannsee Conference had absolutely the leadership of the Holocaust at it. Not one of those people at the Wannsee Conference was executed by the Nuremberg trials. I'm sorry, there was one guy who was executed explicitly for killing British POWs. None of the people at Wannsee were, these are the leaders of the Holocaust. None of them were executed for carrying out the Holocaust. One guy got a short prison sentence, and none of the rest. And so my position is that if the bankers didn't tell them, you carry out the Holocaust and we'll rescue you, I can't prove that they said that. You carry out the Holocaust and we will rescue you and we will delay the U.S. invasion until it's clear to us that the war is over. In any case, we'll get you 32 months. We will guarantee you 32 months. And for 32 months, you take a tenth of the resources that it would take you to fight the U.S. Army and devote that to killing Jews. And so you will save nine-tenths in the bargain. I can't prove that any of that happened except that it all happened. I can't prove that the promise was made, but I can, as is common knowledge, that it happened. I can't prove that they promised that they would delay the invasion for 32 months if the Germans would kill the Jews in their custody, but they did delay the invasion for 32 months, and the Germans did kill the Jews in their custody. I can't prove that they promised the participants at Wannsee to rescue them, but I can prove that they rescued them. I can't prove that they promised it, only that they rescued them.
Okay, take a breath, John. We're going to go to Mike in New York. Mike, you're on with John and Michael. Go ahead.
Hey, Michael. Hi, John.
Hello?
Great show, guys.
Thanks.
Very interesting. I just like to throw into the mix, of course, that the persecution of the Jews was implemented also to follow the strategy of establishing the modern state of Israel as a homeland. I happen to this local paper here accidentally printed up. They were doing a recirculation of a paper edition of theirs back in the early 1900s, and in it was an article regarding, it was dated 1903, regarding the Russian pogrom on the Russian Jews and the persecution going on there. And the leader of the Jewish people at the time, I forget his name, but he was pleading to allow a modern state of Israel to be created so that the Jewish people could flee there and avoid these persecutions. So that never came about, of course, at that time, but it sure did right after World War II. And so that falls, that fits into part of that big equation. And also the Nazis were very advanced technology-wise. I've got photos of all kinds of their various models of anti-gravity craft, the discs, as well as the jets that they had already in the early 40s. And so the other interesting thing, John and Michael, is why didn't Hitler use those technologies? Somebody stopped them from actually using those technologies, too. And the way I piece it together so far, guys, is that the Rockefellers and all those financiers that propped up Hitler and the Nazis, along with the Bolsheviks, would not allow these secret technologies to come out, because if the Nazis did lose, all that technology would fall into civilian hands, you know, fairly quickly, and then that technology would be implemented in civilian life. And now, at this stage of our current history, when they're trying to wrap up this global New World Order agenda, they would not have that secret technology, that advanced technology, to use on us when the time comes, if they need to just totally subdue us with a technology that's at least 75 years ahead of anything that we currently have as civilians.
John?
That's all news to me. My impression was that the Germans had rocket technology, the buzz bombs, the V2, that they, I was under the impression they put their rocket technology to use as quickly as they could. I don't know if they ever got a jet plane into the air. I can't remember. They were certainly
they
very, very close.
ME-262.
And didn't they introduce it into combat?
Yes, they did.
Well, so the story, the suggestion that they withheld anything for any reason is news to me.
I think, Mike, you're talking about the discs, right? You're talking about the flying discs, correct? Mike?
I
think we lost him.
Hello, guys?
Mike?
Oh, yeah.
My God? Can you hear me?
No, I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, that's also the Foo Fighter incidents were coming around at that period, and nobody knew exactly what was going on with these unidentified flying craft that defied gravity. And in the beginning, they were able to use them as scout ships because they didn't have total control over maneuvering them. But over time, they perfected them with the most advanced model known as the Viril, V-I-R-L. I've got all kinds of photos. I'd be glad to email you guys so you can see them. They're stunning photos. You can't. There's no mistaking. These are legitimate old photos, even some taken by U.S. pilots
I've run across those through my research, and I know, yes, they were indeed working on that technology. Now, you know, whether they ever got it off the ground with the Foo Fighters, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but there's a question as to whether those Foo Fighters belonged to the Germans or whether they were just simply unidentified flying objects, right?
Yes, that's right. That's all true, but when you see these photos, you know these are strictly man-made. Now, how the Germans came about acquiring this technology ties all that in, Michael, as well as all the advanced geniuses of that period, like Schriever and Schauberger, who developed the concepts for anti-gravity craft. And but there is an extraterrestrial component to all this, as far as the legend goes, as well. Hitler was supposedly on occasion referring to these entities, and he was always really scared when he mentioned them, as far as he would tremble, or some would say literally poop his pants, because they were so fearsome. But one thing's for sure, they did have this technology. That's why, John, under Operation Paperclip, Alan Dulles brought all these Nazis over here. And you could even see how far they got here with that swastika building off the Coronado Navy base off San Diego, where you can see from a satellite image a giant building that's a perfect swastika shape.
Right.
Have you seen that, John?
That I've seen.
Yeah.
The rest of the story I'm not very familiar with.
Right, right. No, I've done a bit of research on that, and I know that, yes, the Germans were working on the disc technology. Now, and then the question of the Foo Fighters, whether it belonged to the Germans or whether it was, you know, unidentified flying objects. You're saying it did indeed belong to the Germans, Mike?
Yes, sir. And that's why they sent Admiral Byrd to South America immediately after World War II with a fleet of with Canadians and Australians to fight Nazis in South America. And, of course, this was all hushed up when he came back.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Mike. Look, do me a favor. Email me some of that stuff. I'd like to take a look at it. But at any rate, we're running out of time here. I'm going to have to let you go, buddy. Okay,
guys, thank you.
We only got a few minutes left. John, yeah, continue your thought. We only got a minute or two to the break, and we've got a short segment, as you know, coming up, and then we're done for the week. So go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to think what we can do to wrap this up. The caller brought up the issue of Operation Sunrise and Operation Paperclip, which brought, I wasn't aware of the numbers, thousands of Nazis to this country. And there were not thousands of specialists in rocketry, and there were not thousands of specialists in jet engines. And the people that they did bring were the leaders of the Holocaust. I mean, they rescued Eichmann. It's documented. They've recently declassified the documents, showing that the U.S. Army intelligence told the European police agencies, do not arrest Eichmann if you find him. The cooperation of the CIA and the Vatican in getting Eichmann out of the country has been released, right? The documents have been declassified and released. Eichmann didn't know anything about rockets, and he didn't know anything about jets, and he didn't know anything about spying. He was a killer, and they rescued him, and they rescued all of his subordinates. They rescued Klaus Barbie and the rest of these murderers. And how can you explain? Why did they do it? What possible benefit did they have to gain? And I would suggest that the only benefit was keeping the story quiet. Keeping the truth of the story.
Did he know anything about broadcasting breaks that we're going to take? We'll be back in three with the final segment. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening. Be right back.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
All right. right, we're back. Final segment of the American Awakening with my guest, John Hankey. And, John, how do you want to close this out today? I know there's a lot more that you could cover, but we got a little sidetracked. We didn't get to go into all of it. So close us out.
Well, we're going to pick up with we've done a lot on Himmler, on Goering. We're going to do Himmler and the Rothschilds on next Wednesday. And you don't want to miss the part about the Rothschilds. Several callers have discussed the and this last one discussed the role, the connection between the founding of Israel and the Holocaust, and that is a connection that's extremely valuable in looking at. I wanted to emphasize also that, you know, I try to stick with the most mainstream of sources, and I think in the coming weeks, I'm going to try showing how you can take the most mainstream sources and find these guys telling you the truth about themselves, which I always find to be much, much more valuable and powerful than when you find something that comes from a source that, you know, you can't have any real confidence in the credibility of the source. Now, I was talking about how at WANSI, they did all of this stuff. They made all of these plans to get the Holocaust going in seriousness, and that none of these people were executed at Nuremberg for the Holocaust. I wanted to talk about Goering. Goering wasn't at WANSI, but he ordered WANSI, and he was not executed at Nuremberg. He testified at Nuremberg, and it's all very interesting, and here's the story as quickly as I can tell it. He gets up on the stand, and it's really extraordinary, and it's available online. The prosecutor leads him through this testimony that all of the other sources about Hitler and who was really in charge are dead, so that he's the only guy who can tell you the story, and he is here to tell you that Hitler was in charge, and he decided everything that was going to get done, and poor little Goering was just following orders that Adolf was given. Now, he was then ordered to hang. He had been in prison for 9 months. During the time that he was in prison, and in between then and the end of the war, there had been a number of incidents where different Nazi leaders were either discovered with cyanide capsules in their possession or their bodies were found with cyanide capsules in their mouths. Goebbels was found in his entire family there, right? He forced them all to take these cyanide capsules. So it was a technique that was very, very familiar to the prison keepers at the turnkeys at Nuremberg. One has to assume that Goering would have been searched many, 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 many times for his possession of these capsules. 9 months of imprisonment. He comes walking out, so he's on the trial. He says all the stuff that I would suggest that the bankers would have paid him to say, right? That there's nothing suspicious going on behind the scenes. This is all above board, boys. What you think you know is what was really going on, and I'm here to tell you, and I'm here to tell you that I'm the only witness. I'm the only guy who's alive who knows. They sentence him to hang. He walks out and supposedly, allegedly, takes one of these capsules. How he came into its possession, there's no, the official story is that he managed to hide it for those 9 months. And then they cremate the body so that at this late date, if we wanted to, or any other date between now and the time that they allegedly cremated the body, we can't do anything to see whether or not that's true. Now, that on itself, the story I've just told, I don't think is very, very powerful to suggest that Goering's death was a fraud. I would point out, I would stress very, very emphatically that they rescued Eichmann, and Eichmann was relatively worthless. Goering would have been a very, very powerful, valuable asset to the CIA, and when we look at Himmler next week, we'll see much more. The evidence for Himmler, Himmler's suicide was a fraud, is much, much more powerful, and I think that Goering is also. Goering and Himmler, I think, were both rescued along with Eichmann.
Great.
But we'll look at that evidence next week.
All right, look forward to it, man. Thank you so much for coming on today, John. Again, it's www.bushkilledjfk.com. Go buy a video. And www.theamericanawakening.org. That's my website, and I'll be posting some more stuff up there in the near future. Okay, that ends another day. Stay tuned for the National Intel Report with John Stadtmiller, and I will see you again tomorrow with my guest, Wendy Callahan. So look forward to talking to you then. Bye-bye. Have a good rest of the day. 'Cause I'm mad as hell.